I've been struck by how many people have so many limitations around like really dreaming big, especially women, because they've been told to be a certain way and like that they need to fill certain roles and that they don't need to outperform their partner or their spouse or whatever. Meek. It's safe to dream, and it's safe to dream really big, and it's safe to want more. You're allowed to want more and also be grateful for where you are and what you have right now.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I'm making friends with Tori Gordon. Tori is a trauma-informed breathwork facilitator, peak performance coach, and award-winning content creator. As the founder of Coachable LLC, she has helped nearly 1 million people worldwide achieve success and fulfillment through engaging content, seminars, coaching programs, you name it. Tori has been featured on major media outlets, including NBC, CBS, and Fox News, and her popular podcast, The Coachable Podcast, has been named one of the top 5 podcasts to get you through COVID. As an award-winning mental health influencer, Tori is a brand ambassador for international brands such as Nature Made, Better Health, Organifi, Natural Cycles, so many more. She was named by Yahoo News as a top 10 mindset coach in the US and is now a highly sought after speaker hired by organizations such as the United Nations. Tori, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That's a very warm, generous introduction. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. We don't know how to welcome people any other way, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't work as well anyway if you give cold introductions for people.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So you're a Vegas local.
Yes.
As well, but only for the past year or so.
Yep.
So where are we from before that?
New transplant from Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
But originally from Alabama.
So East Coast though.
Yes.
How do you like being on the West Side?
I love it, except for my skin does not love it.
It's a little dry out here.
Dry. Yeah. But I am happily, like very happily, like settled here, and Vegas has surprised me in all the good ways.
Yeah. So you're from the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about early stage family life, living out there, you know, 7-8-year-old Tori Gordon. Set the scene for us. What's life like? What are your parents doing? What are you up to?
Grew up in a very nuclear family. Okay. Older sister, 4 years older than me, and my parents were married for 36 years. Both of my parents were both educators and musicians. So I grew up with a big value of education and curiosity. And so my parents really instilled in me resourcefulness in the way of like, if you want to know something, ask the right questions and learn to ask the right people, and you can be unstoppable. So that was kind of instilled in me since I was really young, and also was super competitive as a kid. So athlete.
So you were an MVP in 3 different sports.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
What were the sports?
Basketball, softball, and soccer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any of them that you liked better than the other?
Softball was my main sport.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a pitcher. So
nice.
There's an element of liking to be in control there. And but also just like, I think as a kid, I wanted to be as involved in every play. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, I think I've seen so many of the ways that's like actually shaped me more than I thought as a kid. But I think it really started as somebody was like, hey, we need a pitcher, who wants to volunteer? And I was always the one to say, yeah, I'll do it.
What kind of ways do you think it shaped you?
I think it taught me to be a leader in a lot of ways, a team player, but it taught me how to work hard. It taught me how to go for a goal, know what I want, put in the work, put in the reps, and get better every day. But at the same time, I think on the darker side of that, I think it taught me, like, if I didn't carry the team or if I didn't make the play happen, I kind of felt like this pressure that it all like was up to me. And so I've actually been thinking about this in the last few years more as I became a business owner and was doing like starting my own team and that kind of thing, is like how to actually trust my team members to take the ball and be fully responsible for their role
for
on the team.
Role. Yeah.
And not overcompensate and think I need to do it all.
You can't be responsible for everybody's role.
Yeah.
Do you feel though that the pressure is helpful? Where does it become unhealthy, I guess, is the question. I played a lot of sports growing up, played a lot of basketball, tend to feel kind of the same way, especially in a business context. Everything mm-hmm. rises and falls on leadership. And if you're the person at the top and the person people look to, then you take more accountability than everybody else does. Sure. And with that comes a lot of stress and comes a lot of pressure and comes a lot of anxiety. And I think that some of it's extremely necessary.
Yeah.
But where, at what point does it become, you know, unhealthy or, you know, I guess that's really my question that I'm mm-hmm. asking. Where do you think that it stops being valuable because it's just constantly weighing on you or you're taking more than you should be taking or whatever?
Yeah, I think it requires self-awareness to even be able to take inventory and stock of how stressed you are and how much pressure you're actually under and how that's impacting your results. For me, I am able to notice internally what is my internal environment like? And typically my body and my mental health are going to give me cues when I'm like, I'm operating out of a really like a stressed response instead of out of like an intentional, conscious, grounded decision-making place. And I think part of being a real leader requires you to be humble enough to say, I need help and I'm taking on too much. And be able to delegate. And that's been a learning curve for me, especially in business as I have grown and scaled and still operate a very small team of people that I only like deeply trust. Because like in business of any kind, like there's this idea that no one's going to care as much as you care, mm-hmm. right? And you want people to take care of your baby. It's like, this is my baby. This is what I'm working on and pursuing every day. And you want the people that are working on your team to care as much about the product. So I think for me, it's really having my finger on the pulse of my own internal environment and really doing intentional check-ins and like, how am I doing? Like,
yeah.
And my results tend to speak for themselves. When I'm like, the tension is pulling to where I'm like fraying mm-hmm. at the end, that's the time where I'm like, okay, we need to take some of that tension off.
Yeah, time to take a day.
In what ways can we do that? Yeah.
How do you like to work through that? Is there like an activity you do, an action that you take, a meditation you try, mm-hmm. conversations you have, people you call? What's your process for
all
working through
that? All of the above. All of the above. Yeah, I've got a lot of tools. So breath work is one of those for me. It is an immediate state changer.
It is a hack.
Yeah. Because just in a couple of minutes, I can go from a stress response to downregulating my nervous system and feeling more grounded and in control of everything happening. Yeah. And so that's like an immediate thing. Getting in nature is really big for me.
Okay.
It helps me to ground because when I get in the states, right, it's like you're really heavily operating in your mind. The mental is, it's like, you're thinking about all the things you need to do.
Yeah.
You're thinking about your laundry list of personal and professional things that are taxing on you. You're thinking about what could go wrong, what could go right, whatever. And so—
But mostly what could go wrong.
Yeah. But a big yeah. part of it is like, let me get reconnected what's actually true and what's actually real because my mind can play games and I don't need to believe everything I think.
And what matters.
Right.
Right. Because like that's, I do a lot of the same things, try to, you know, spend a day or two by myself at the beach or something. Like I get by myself for sure. Yeah. And then try to get out, even if it's just, like I said, smoking a cigar mm-hmm. with a beautiful view at sunset somewhere with a drink in my hand and a re-engagement into what it means to be alive and an appreciation for just being, because that's already a blessing to just be. And then realizing that anything I build on top of that is just icing on the cake.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like first of all, I'm here at this with this beautiful view and enjoying time with myself, smoking a cigar with a whiskey and having a great evening. And if that's all life provided me, it would be a fucking great life.
Yep.
But I get the opportunity to do all these other things. And if I can figure out a way to make sure that I can re-engage with me, with Travis, it's deep down in here somewhere, mm-hmm. the real version of me, then I think that version is much more likely to be able to go conquer a bunch more things because, you know, the life is not a zero sum game. It's not a you win or you lose type of a thing. It's like there's multiple ways to make it happen. So yeah, I do a lot of the same things. Try to give it myself.
Well, and everything you just said is like are things that help us get present.
Yeah. Right.
And when you're in the mind, you're not really present with you're not in an engaged relationship with life. You're in a relationship with your mind and all of the thoughts that you're having. And so whatever practices that I tend to use are ones that bring me back into the present moment of actually what's really real and what's actually really going on, so that I can either attune and meet my needs or just, again, come back to the truth that, like, everything is okay.
Yeah, right. Even if it's seemingly not, yeah, it is.
It really is. And
that's one of the reasons I love having a show too, because I get to sit down and have conversations with people like you all the time. Mm-hmm. And when we dig into their story, there's inevitably periods of uncertainty where there's obstacles you're not sure how to overcome. There's huge problems. There's bankruptcies. There's people losing tens of millions of dollars on deals. There's people that have built up a nine-figure net worth, lost it all. Every successful person I've talked to has these moments and these periods of time where they're like, what am I doing? Am I qualified to do this? I don't know exactly how I got to where I am now. And I don't know how I'm going to get to where I'm going. And I'm totally underqualified and nobody believes me and I don't believe in myself. And I should just go back to flipping burgers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that really helps me is trying to think about what I want my story to be in 10, 20 years from now, like 5 years from now, Travis, 10 years from now, Travis, 20 years from now, Travis. What part of my journey is this going to be when I'm telling that story on stage or at a podcast in 20 years from now?
Right.
This is going to be that part where I'm like, yeah, I thought everything was over. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm losing this, or I'm not in control of this thing, or I'm under a lot of stress or pressure. But if I can take myself out of that and put myself in 20 years from now, Travis, and be like, look, I think that's what's so important about committing to the long term, is that I know that I'm in the game long. Mm-hmm. So I know it's going to work out at some point, because there's no way it's not going to, because
right,
I'm in the game that long. This is just part of the story.
Yeah.
Along
the
way.
That's the perspective that I think most people miss and don't. And I think having that perspective is the differentiator between long-term success or not, because here's what happens. You're at where you are, wherever anybody listening is in their life, whether it's they're unhappy with their career, their relationship status, their financial status, whatever it is. And then they think about where they want to be, right, mm-hmm, in 5 years. And they imagine that compelling future that they want to become, that version of themselves. And then there's the gap between where am I, where do I want to be, and this, what feels like insurmountable, mm-hmm, distance between those two things. And what they do is they define where they are, and they make up a story about where they are and what that means about where they're going and their ability to get there. So what I see a lot of times, and I think one of the reasons I've had the success I've had is because I've switched this mentality, is I never make where I am mean anything negative about where I want to go. Mm. Meaning, if I think that I'm not where I want to be yet, and I think that means I'm not a good leader, maybe I'm not creative enough, I don't have the skills, I don't have the experience, all the stories we tell ourselves. But if you think long term and you knew without a shadow of a doubt you were going to get to that destination, and that it was, or even something better, mm-hmm, that or something better, if you knew that and had that confidence and had that belief and you could see 10 years down the road and see how amazing your life was, you wouldn't make where you are mean anything, but this is just a stepping stone.
Absolutely.
And that's how I approach my life. And I'm like, oh, where I am at is exactly where I need to be, because it's where I'm at right now. And absolutely, if I was meant to be somewhere else, I would be. But the fact that I'm experiencing this in this moment means it's for me, and I get to figure out what's in this for me. And if I'm not experiencing gratitude, or if I'm experiencing tension or overwhelm or stress, I just come back to that. And it's like, what is this trying to show me? Because it's for me, and it's trying to move me towards the direction of who I think I want to become.
Yeah, we're absolutely a reflection of the obstacles that we overcome, mm-hmm, and the pressure that we face, and moving past that pressure. And I think that if you don't learn how to stomach that now, that you're never going to get to the destination you're trying to get to, or the better one that may end up. That was kind of the realization that I had lately. Cause when I started Guestia, we raised this money to seed the software company. And I never started a software company before. I'm not a developer. I'm not a product guy. I didn't have any business starting a software business. We raised money for it from a bunch of people that I trust and admire and look up to, and all these, you know, different people I've built relationships with over the years. And extremely stressful after we closed the round. Counterintuitively, it was like, you know, typically people will kind of praise that, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh, you raised over $1 million for a software startup. Great sure. job. And to me, it was like, as soon as we closed, I was like the most stressed I've ever felt in my life.
Now the work starts.
Yeah. Because like that's step one. And yeah, it's a difficult step,
sure.
but now the real work begins where I have to go turn this money into more money. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or I risk losing my reputation. And it weighed on me so heavily for 6 to 8 months, made me almost like not even productive. Mm. And eventually it got to the point where I was like, if this is the path that I'm choosing, meaning that even if like, regardless of what happens with Guestio, we go bankrupt or we sell for $100 million, whatever happens, I'm still going to be taking risks like this for the rest of my life because that's who I am. And that's the path that I'm choosing. So if I can't learn to stomach the risk of like a small amount of money of $1 million, like what makes me think I can go raise $12 million or $20 million or start a real estate fund and buy, you know, multifamily properties that are $150 million in our portfolio? Like what makes me think that I can go do all those other things if I can't stomach the pressure that comes along with $1 million? Mm-hmm. And it just forced me to figure out a way to deal with it. The solution's not going to come tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like we're in a build here. This is going to take multiple years to figure out. And if I can't figure out how to stomach the pressure now, I'm going to have ulcers and gray hair by the time I'm 33.
How did you, how did you do that? What was the thing that you figured out how to deal with that?
So the first thing was like getting to the root of the problem. Like what is the thing that stresses me out the most about what I do?
Which is typically what rooted in some kind of fear. Like if you like strip it all back, it's like, what's the fear there?
It wasn't necessarily fear for me. It was more of a lack of alignment in my skill set
okay.
versus what I was spending time on. So the solution for me became hire somebody that's an operator that can take all the things off of my plate that I don't want to do, even though they're an expensive hire, even though it's a big risk of a hire, because it's the most expensive hire I've ever done. Bringing in that person and taking that pressure off of me will allow me to do the things with my time that I think I'm uniquely qualified and very good at
right.
that most people are not good at. And that is a better seat for me to sit in. And this person can handle this thing. So it took us like 4 months, 30 interviews and stuff. We finally made an offer like 6 weeks ago. We brought on, or like 2 months ago, we brought on an operator for that business. Mm-hmm. And it's already taken loads of stress off of my shoulders.
Yeah.
Even though it's a, like, again, it's a big risk. It may not even work out. Like, I hope it does. I think the guy's really great. We, like I said, 30 interviews and we did 2 or 3 rounds of interviews, met in person. I get good feelings from the guy. He's working well with the team. Everything's going well, but it's a risk nonetheless. But I think that it was one that was worth it. For me, it came down to an understanding of what is the thing that's really stressing me out the most. And it's like, I feel underqualified and undereducated to do this particular role within the company, yet this is where I find myself in the majority of my hours during mm-hmm. the day. And it was absolutely just not working. At first, I was like, I can wear the hat. You know, I'll put that hat on, put this hat on, put this hat on. I just want to save money, run the company really frugally.
I'll do it all.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a really great strategy.
Until it's not.
Exactly. Yeah. So it became not really fast. And that became the root of the problem for me, was just like, how am I spending my time and what will free me up to do the things, like I said, that I'm good at that other people would not be able to do.
Well, again, I think it requires humility to even be able to admit that. But for anybody that watches the show, and for me personally, like I always tend to look at what do I have the most resistance around? You know, why is that resistance there? And yeah. what is that trying to show me? And it might be that I'm out of alignment somewhere. And because when I'm in alignment, that resistance intention kind of goes away. And I always think about it as like going to the chiropractor. It's like when I get back into my role that I'm good at, that I'm uniquely qualified for, and I'm not trying to be everything to everybody. I'm not trying to be someone I'm not. And I'm letting that person be really good at what they're good at. Then there's just this release of, the pressure that tension, built up.
Right.
Yeah.
Now it's super important
for
us to do, to make that decision. But I really want to get back. We skipped a bunch of things here in your story that I'm really interested in. So I want to get back into that.
Sure.
So sports, competitive, parents and education. So did they push you down a certain career path? Like I typically find that people whose parents were really into the education side don't really end up like in the online world. Mm-hmm. They tend to have like more kind of traditional career paths, traditional college, university, get a job, you know, be an accountant or a lawyer or something like that. Did they push you in that direction at all? Was that ever part of your path? Did you have any inkling or desire to go down those directions?
Yes and no. So they never pushed me in any one direction. And I actually sort of always had this entrepreneurial spirit since I was a kid. Like, I was the kid that would bring, like, get my mom on Saturday, get her to take me to Sam's or Costco and buy like candy in bulk and take it to school and like sell it on the side to my friends.
Nice.
And then I ran in college. I ran a photography business.
What did you go to school?
I went to the University of Alabama.
Oh, okay.
So I started in photography, thought I wanted to be a commercial photographer, had a great business in college. And my sister got sick with cancer. And I did this portrait photo shoot of her after she shaved her head and lost all of her hair. And that was such a profound experience. And for some reason, it kind of stole my joy for photography at the time. It was actually, I put the camera down after that and didn't really pick it up for a really long time. And all of a sudden I was like, I want to take my life in a different path. And I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew I wanted, like most people, to help people, right? I was like, what do you want to do? I want to help people. What does that mean? What does that look like? And I didn't know. And like many people in college, you're kind of trying to figure that out. And a friend of mine was like, well, I'm in social work and it's easy. And so I followed that. And so
that's
the
mind of a 19-year-old.
Totally.
It's like, easy? Sign me up.
But the thing was, my parents always really encouraged me to find my way. And they believed in me and they trusted me that I would figure it out, and that they just continued to encourage me to pursue the things that were real and true and interesting for me. So I got into social work, and although I found it interesting in psychology, that's where I started to dip my toe into psychology, I figured out very quickly it was not going to provide the lifestyle I wanted, and it was really heavy and dense and intense. And so I went the corporate path right out of college. It was like, what my dad always said was like, but you do have to pay your bills and you got to figure that out. So I took a job in software sales right out of college and did that outside sales for 6 years before I went in-house to do sales operations training and onboarding for like performance management. We were selling legal software and services to large corporate legal departments in the biggest law firms in the country.
Yeah. How was that experience for you?
Worked for a really toxic boss, which taught me a lot, though, about teamwork and collaboration outside of that
culture. Toxic in what ways?
Oh, gosh.
Don't even get you started.
Yeah. just abusive.
Just an abuse of power.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also even the hiring structure. He hired, so his HR, like, hiring manager was a former Miss USA. And his whole strategy was to hire girls that had been in the Miss USA pageant system because they were beautiful and they could talk and they could hold a conversation and men enjoyed giving them.
Sell better.
Yeah, they sold better. Yeah. And that was the whole strategy. And as you know, so that was the environment you come into.
Yeah.
It was, here's a Tiffany bracelet during your onboarding process, but I'm not going to give you health insurance. That was the environment that I lived, like I worked in for 6 years. And it was interesting though, thinking back, like
just a touch of misogyny.
Sort of became like this, in some ways, this person that the other, my like coworkers rallied around because I wasn't really afraid to stick up for myself. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't afraid to stand up for the other people that I worked with. And he didn't love the fact that I balked at his authority.
No?
No.
It's so strange.
So
usually people like that
left.
Have such a great relationship with their ego.
But there's a cost and a payoff to everything. And I realized that. There was a cost to working for them, but there was a payoff, right? I had flexibility. There were different.
Making good money,
and
I
was always weighing the options. You know, weighing, is this worth being here or not? And for a while, it was a very strategic move to stay as long as I did. And then when the cost outweighed the benefits, I was out.
You also probably gained a lot of experience in selling.
Totally.
Which was
invaluable.
Pretty beneficial to the rest of your
extremely
career.
Extremely valuable. Because then I ended up going working for the top country in the industry. Yeah, top company, and doing all of their sales training and teaching salespeople how to go out and sell.
So that was two separate companies.
Yes.
So you did outside sales for this other company and then moved to inside sales management.
Yeah, sales operations.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Then I ended up starting a podcast, and the response from the company at the time, because I posted on LinkedIn, I got a call from my boss and her boss, and they didn't love the fact that I'd started a podcast.
Why?
The response that I got from them was that this looks like it takes a lot of time. And how do we know you're not doing it on our dollar? Because I worked from home full time. And they made a lot of assumptions out of the gate, thinking that they were afraid, in their opinion, that I was going to like sell, like give away trade secrets and stuff. Well, they didn't even realize because they failed to listen to the show. Right. It had nothing, it to, do nothing to do with sales or anything that we did. So that put enough of a bad taste in my mouth to really want to pursue what felt good for me. Because at the time I was going through this whole separate kind of come to Jesus moment, spiritual awakening in my personal life that was completely restructuring my priorities and what was really meaningful and important to me.
Yeah.
And so that was my first act of creating something that I was really proud of that felt like Tori, that was rejected in such a public way
and formal way.
Yeah. That I was like, all right, this was the push I needed to go actually bet on myself and see what I can do on my own.
Why did you start the podcast to begin with?
I wanted to bottle up conversations that I had with my parents my whole life, you know, sitting on the patio, having wine, grilling out and having really meaningful, profound, helpful, useful conversations that I realized as I got older, other people didn't have access to. Other people didn't have parents like mine. They weren't encouraged the way I was. And I was like, people need this. And it was sort of a selfish endeavor because I was very much trying to heal from a lot of the things I'd experienced in my life. And it was my opportunity to have a one-on-one conversation with somebody who could actually provide me useful tools. Sure. And so it really started as like my desire to work on myself by interviewing people who had worked on themselves.
Were you a podcast listener for a while before that?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, but not too long. You know, there were a couple of podcasts that I listened to that were very much in the coaching education side. Okay. And
what were some of the first ones that you liked?
The first one was by a woman named Christine Hassler. It's called Over and On with the Podcast.
Yeah, I know.
She became a coach of mine for a little while during that period. And
I met her at a Aubrey Marcus mastermind event years ago.
So similar type, those types of shows, Aubrey's show being one of them as well. And I was at a place personally where I was doing a whole new level of self-exploration and self-discovery. Like, who am I? Why do I do what I do? Why am I pursuing the things that I'm pursuing? What do I enjoy? So those shows kind of allowed me to be a sponge, but there was always like a moment where I was like, okay, now I need
to like do something about it.
Yeah. It's like, you can just absorb as much information as you want. There's knowledge out there everywhere, but apply, like that doesn't necessarily make you powerful. You have to apply it and integrate it and use it.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah.
It's kind of the same thing with the idea thing. It's so funny when you get people that have like an idea for a company or something and they're so secretive about it. And I learned this when I was pitching for Guestio, because you start realizing like in angel investors, VCs and all this other stuff, like you're initially thinking, hey, please sign this NDA because I'd want to protect my IP or whatever. No serious angel investor is going to sign an NDA to look at your pitch deck, you know, like because they know more so than most people that ideas are literally a dime a dozen. Sure. There is zero value in having an idea. The only value comes in the execution of that idea. And it's the same concept. You can soak up knowledge all day, every day, and still work at Starbucks for the rest of your life.
Many people whose lives
are
in the, like, they're getting the results they're getting. And it's not because they have a lack of resources or information. And I think it's Jim Quick who's like, shelf help is not self-help.
Yeah, shelf help. Yeah, he does call it shelf help.
Yeah, he's like, you're buying a book and it's sitting there collecting dust. Or even you read it, but you have yet to apply one principle. No, that sounds good. And I'm going to post a quote on my Instagram or tweet this. But yet I've done nothing differently.
Right.
You know, and I try to live my life in a way that my internal world and my external world are congruent. You know what I mean?
They're aligning.
They're aligning. It's integrity. And there certainly and will, I'm sure, be moments in my life where I say one thing and I do another, right?
Sure.
But
sometimes it's like we all have blind spots.
Totally.
Yeah.
But that's a check-in that I do very consistently with myself.
The check-in's a good idea. It's the clarity, like purposeful times to take an inventory of what you believe, why you believe it, and if your actions match with mm-hmm. what your beliefs are. And a lot of times just consuming a bunch of information is actually counterintuitive to the path that you should be going down, because there's so many conflicting views. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about earlier, like success is not a there's not success or not success.
Linear.
You can have success in a multitude of ways. And so if you listen to this person and then you listen to this person and you read from 14 different people, they're all going to have different opinions about what you should be doing, mm-hmm. how you should be spending your time. What, like at the end of the day, you got to just do, you got to do something.
Absolutely.
And then the next thing to do will probably show itself to you while you're doing the first thing.
Exactly.
But if you just sit and wait and hope for this revelation, it's just, it's not going to come. Those are the people that have 1 year of experience 20 times over. Like they'll tell you like, I've been working this job for 20, I have 20 years of experience. It's like, no, you have 1 year of experience lived 20 years over
so
because
true.
You've never done anything different. Mm-hmm. And all you're hoping for at the end of the year is your little cost of living raise, your 7% increase on your pay. And you keep talking about all the things that you want to do. And you keep thinking about all these ideas and you have a dream board and a vision board and you've watched The Secret 42 times on Netflix, but you don't do anything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you don't do anything, nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think that's the kicker, right? You can't be in the planning phase forever. And that's when just absorbing and collecting information and knowledge becomes a form of self-sabotage, honestly.
It is, absolutely.
Because it's just another distraction.
It's mental masturbation.
It's something that you can get off on that makes you feel like you're making progress, makes you feel good about yourself.
Hit a dopamine.
But you really aren't doing nothing.
Yep.
And I would rather follow somebody and like learn from somebody who goes to a workshop, goes to a retreat, reads a book, and then spends the next 60, 90 days doing the thing.
Yeah. And falling on their face most likely.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to, is it's operating from a place of fear and scarcity, because at the end of the day, you think that the consumption of the information is going to prevent you from failing at all. And while it may be the case that will help maybe mitigate failure or bring you more information to light that will help you in your journey, maybe shave some time off the learning curve, you will fail. It is a guarantee. You will be embarrassed of something that you do. You will fall flat on your face when you try to launch a new product or write a book or start a podcast or quit your job and start a freaking flooring business. I don't care what it is. You will fail. It is not a matter of if, it is a matter of when. So the sooner you take action and start getting used to failing, the sooner you learn how to overcome that failure better, and the sooner you learn how to avoid that failure again in the future.
Yeah.
And if you just sit there reading and consuming information, thinking that's going to be the thing that prevents you from the pain of failure, you're just wrong.
Right.
It's just a lack of understanding of what it takes to truly become outsized successful. You know what I mean? It's just, it's part, you have to factor it in.
Yeah.
And some people can't stomach that because it sucks, especially if it's something like this, podcasting or content or something, because it's such a public way to fail.
Sure.
That was the biggest fear that I had when I started this, because I had a bunch of people that I knew were hoping I was going to fail because of the world that I came from. There was a bunch of people that I just knew were just, like I said, it's a public way to be like, I want to do this thing publicly.
Like, we'll watch
please
you.
Help. Yeah, yeah, right. And so you have people sitting there with popcorn just hoping.
Yep.
And it's like, I know that during the times where I was failing, the first couple of years where I was like barely getting by and trying to get this thing off the ground and, you know, get to the end of the runway and have some lift. Mm-hmm. It was like, I know that those people were just rooting for my failure. And in some ways they got what they wanted several times over during that period of time. Mm-hmm. But if you are so concerned with what's happening in the next 12 months, you'll never be able to optimize for what's happening in the next 10 years. And that's a much more effective way to go about success in general.
Yeah.
Is thinking more long-term than short-term and being able to delay gratification and be okay with short-term embarrassment, short-term failure, because you know that at one point, like at some point, it's going to flip. You know what I mean? Where like that person is seemingly like they're somebody that's talking shit on you or actively rooting for you to fail. And it seemingly looks like when you're, whatever, 25, that maybe they're more successful because they stayed in the corporate job.
Right.
And they're getting a fat salary and they live in a beautiful condo on the high rise in Chicago or whatever. And you're like eating shit, living in your parents' spare bedroom, trying to build a business. It looks like they've won. But in 10 years, they're here because they've gotten two promotions. Mm-hmm. But you're here because you've built a multi 8-figure business that you exit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a complete misunderstanding of priority.
it just reminds me of a conversation or a text I got recently, because I had that exact experience. Basically, when I started posting on social media and starting my own business and the podcast and everything, there was definitely a contrast of reviews from my friends and people that I knew and what mm-hmm. people thought about it. From my bosses.
People from work, yeah,
to,
right.
From my bosses and my coworkers to my friends, closest friends. And I definitely lost friendships. I remember one girl specifically I was really close with. The things that she would say about me is like, oh, Tori's trying to be an influencer. Like, look at what is she trying to do? Like, making it a joke and thinking it was funny. And that relationship kind of dissolved. And only this past week, now that we just crossed the million mark and having a ton of success and hit number one on the education podcast. And I get this long text from her, and it's been years. I was the godmother of her child. Like, we were deeply close. And she was just basically said, you pursuing the thing that you wanted and doing it so, you know, passionately and intentionally, like, triggered me because I wasn't growing. I was afraid you were going to leave me behind and as a result outgrow me. And so it's interesting.
She pushed you away.
Yeah, exactly.
To make sure it happened.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just interesting because, like you were saying, it really does come down to like the longevity and like thinking long term mm-hmm. because these things, you know, aren't built overnight.
They all take time.
They all take yep. time. But yet the people who, you know, are the doubters or the haters, who there will be, and they want to see you fail, the moment that you start to have success, the moment that they're like,
it's the come to Jesus moment where they realize they were wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And
where they can't say anything about it anymore.
Right.
You know, so their only option is to support.
Right.
Because you're going to be successful regardless.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's unfortunate that it works that way, but that is how it works. And it's the same, you know, for anybody that's trying to do something, anything different. If you're just trying to do something different, you're always going to get this reaction. And mm-hmm. it's going to be most painfully from the people that love you and care about you the most.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And sometimes it's because of what, you know, your friend was saying, but other times it's because they don't want to see you fail. They don't want to see you get embarrassed. They don't want to see you, you know, do it for 8 months and then realize that you quit your job and now you don't know how you're going to pay it. Like, they don't want to see that pain either. Mm-hmm. Even some people are just, they're doing it from a place of love for you.
Yeah.
It's just misplaced.
Absolutely.
Because it's a misunderstanding of what I value in life. It's just like, I don't want to work for a corporation mm-hmm. that doesn't value what I want. I want to do this thing. Even if it means less money, even if it means late nights, even if it means downgrade in my lifestyle for a little while, you know, it's a worthy pursuit and I'm fine with that. Yeah. And I need you to be fine with that.
Well, and it's a projection. It's a projection of their own feet that mm-hmm. they're putting onto you and
right.
they're calling it and they're saying, I'm trying to protect you and I want to love you by keeping you small. And that's unfortunate. And like you said, it's just misplaced. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, it is. Yeah. As a parent, it's your job to keep your kids safe.
Of course.
So it's really hard when they like become an adult and they start doing stuff that you perceive as being inherently risky. Yeah, it's
totally.
Like, wait, before you do that, mm-hmm. you know, like, let's maybe talk about this for a second.
Well, I was encouraged when I started. There was like, from a lot of people I deeply respected, they're like, you need to have this much in savings. You need to be able to pay your bills for 6 months if something ever happens. And I was like, that's all nice advice. And I really appreciate it. I'm going to listen to it, but I'm not going to take it.
Yeah.
And not everybody will take the same path.
Sure.
And, but I had a conviction personally.
Yeah.
I knew I needed to put myself on the hook to
yeah.
show up, to actually put in the work that was necessary
yeah.
to get it done.
Money can be a great accountability partner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and if I had that cushion, I wouldn't have had the pressure
right.
to actually go out
to
and
perform.
Make it happen.
Yeah. yeah. Right. No, sometimes you need it.
Yep.
You know, and most of the time, my advice is different for everybody, especially like, you know, if you're in your 40s and you have four kids and you know what I mean? It's like, it's going to be a little bit different.
Absolutely.
But if you're in your 20s and you're single
yeah.
and it's just like, just do something, try things, do like take big risks mm-hmm. literally in the optimal time of life
yeah.
to make those big decisions and put yourself in a position that is potentially extremely risky. And to me, it's like, I always looked at, not always, one thing that I've recently gotten better at, I should say, is looking at my current problems in the scope of the future version that of myself that I want to become. And it really puts things into perspective because most people would look at a $5,000 investment, a $10,000 investment, a $25,000 investment as intrinsically a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But I always knew that I wanted to be somebody that at least was worth eight figures at the time. Now my goal's moved on to nine figures. But at the time it was like, if I could be worth $10 million, then like, that's a great goal. And I want to do that before I'm 40. Like, I want to be able to have the option to retire before I'm 40 was my goal when I started everything. It's a lot higher than that now. But at the time, it was still made a $20,000, $10,000, $5,000 investment. Super insignificant. If you look at it in relation to where you want to be, you know what I mean? Like, I want to be worth $10 million, but I'm going to let this $5,000 investment prevent me from getting to where I want to be, even though it's astronomically more than what this, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So like, gotta be able to adopt a future versions of yourself's identity before you reach that level, or else you're going to keep making the decisions of the person that thinks $10,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You're going to keep making the decision of the 50K a year person. If you keep taking the actions and adopting the mindset of a 50K a year person, you're always going to be a 50K a year person.
Well, and you might make progress. It's just going to be
incremental. You get your 8%, you know, cost of living raise.
Right. Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're going to come up against a lot of frustration of why am I not making progress at a quicker rate?
Yeah.
But it's going to be it's going to be in proportion to the risks that you're
correct
willing to take.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Cause I hesitate to give the advice to people, but I tell them, this is my story. You know, like, you don't have to do what I did,
exactly.
But I'm telling you, like, if you want to know how I got from where I was to where I am now in this period of time, this is what I did. I'm not telling you have to do the same thing. Cause I understand it's risky and sounds insane. You know, like, when I started the show and wanted to move my business online, because I was doing door-to-door sales at the time, I pulled out a 0% interest credit card and I filled that bad boy up. Mm-hmm. It was $42,000 credit limit. I was 24 at the time, 25 at the time. And I filled up $42,000 in debt on a credit card. But talk about like putting your feet to the fire. I knew that I wasn't going to set my family back and not pay that card off. So before I ever paid a dime in it, it was 18 months, 0% interest. I think it was like the Chase Freedom Unlimited or something. Mm-hmm. And before I ever paid a dime in interest on that, I'd paid off the entire card with money from the online business. And paying off that debt was like a, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it sounds insane. Like to say like, hey, pull out credit cards and spend a bunch of money on them. The problem is that most people would take that advice and then they go buy a TV and a MacBook Pro and stuff like that. I wasn't doing that. I was buying coaching. I was paying for masterminds.
Same.
I was buying proximity to people that figured it out. I was buying knowledge information and I was taking action on all the knowledge information I was getting.
Right.
And I had my sales ability to rely on to where like I knew I could sell stuff if I had something to sell. So paid off that card. When I started my software company, the first version of the software, I pulled out $90,000 in 0% credit cards, three or four different ones. He's my buddy, Bill Jennings, has a company called Pathway Financial. They help you, you know, get lines of credit from credit card companies at 0% interest. So I took out $90,000 in 0% interest credit cards, put the first version of the build of Guestio, it was like $78,000, something like that, almost 80 grand, and built out the first version of the platform and then used that to go raise $1.4 million
right.
to take myself out of debt, put myself in a position to succeed and start building the company. Okay. Those are big risks.
Yeah.
It easily could have been the opposite of that. It easily could have been, I have $80,000 on this credit card. Nobody will give me any money and I can't figure out how to make money. And now I'm just $80,000 in credit card debt. And now I'm paying interest. You know what I mean? Like that could have been the story. But the bottom line is I was okay with that version of the story because I want this to be worth more than 90 grand one day. And at the end of the day, even if I'm on the hook for 90 grand, it's still just not enough to be able to take me away from the pursuit of what I really want to achieve, yeah. which is in 10 years from now, want to be able to not have to work again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you, first of all, aren't thinking about your current problems in contrast to your, you know, future desires, that's one thing. But then secondly, it's a good way to make sure or measure up what your future desires are and if they're big enough. Because sometimes I think people just have an underestimation of what it's going to take.
I agree. I think one of the things I've actually been working with a lot of clients on recently is creating a new orientation to dreaming big, because I've been struck by how many people have so many limitations around like really dreaming big, especially women, because they've been told to be a certain way and like sure. that they need to fill certain roles and that they don't need to outperform their you know, their partner or their spouse or whatever. And so I've actually, that's been a conversation that I've been having with several people recently, is that it's safe to dream, and it's safe to dream really big, and it's safe to want more. You're allowed to want more and also be grateful for where you are and what you have right now. Just because you are pursuing something that feels audacious and big doesn't mean you're not at the same time grateful for what you have.
Sure.
And see your privilege in the position that you might be right now.
Totally. This house that we're in right now, we bought this a couple of years ago. One of the reasons we bought it was that we had a perfect view of the strip, like the whole strip. It was just an empty dirt lot behind us. So on our balcony, we can see like all the Vegas strip, and it was beautiful view sitting out on the porch at night, like glass of wine, whatever. 4 or 5 months ago, we find out that they're doing this huge commercial development behind us. And it was like, oh man, that's going to take away part of our view. But we're like, it is what it is. You know, it's a half mile from the house, and they're putting in some cool restaurants and a good place to go walk around and hang out. So that's pretty cool. You know, take the good with the bad, whatever. But then a couple months later, right behind our house, there's another development going in, and they put in a bunch of like freaking like two-story, three-story, like eight plexes. And they're like luxury condos. So it's not like they're going to be like not great neighbors, but it's 10 feet from our back wall, and it eliminated our view. By the time the project is done, our view will be gone completely. And all we'll be looking at is the stucco of other people's places. And my immediate reaction was like, well, let's pack up and move, you know, let's get out. Let's go somewhere else. Let's find that view, like be able to get a bigger yard or something.
Yeah.
And it was kind of what you're just saying. It was like a realization that like, you know what? It's not smart to do that right now. The real estate market's completely different. We bought at a great time. Our interest rate's extremely low. We have a next gen apartment that we have a renter in that pays us money in rent every month. Like we keep our expenses extremely low so I can be really nimble and take big risks in my business. Mm-hmm. And it's just a phase. And we just need to be very grateful for where we are, because it's still a beautiful home and we're very grateful to have it. And we're lucky to have it. It's you know, better than what we lived in any other place we've been. We have a lot of equity in the home because, again, we bought it at a great time. Our interest rates, like there's so many things to be grateful for, but you can always get caught in that. Like, yeah, but I want that.
Yeah,
but I want to be there. Yeah. And it's like, it's so good to have those big dreams and goals, but it's also so important to remain extremely grateful for the position that you're in and recognize how far you've come as well, or else you're just going to drive yourself crazy.
Absolutely. Well, it's always on to the next best thing, where you don't ever stop to actually appreciate where you are, and knowing what we were talking about earlier, this is a phase. This is a part of the journey. So if me in 5 years was sitting in my mansion with amazing views of the strip and having a glass of wine with my wife, looks back and is like, remember when we were in that house? You know what I mean? And it's like that in your mind, you're like, that is a guarantee. That's going to happen.
Exactly.
You're resourceful. You're committed to doing the long work over time and fail forward. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so this too shall pass. And for now, right now, the grass is going to be green where we water it, and we're going to water it where we are.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Okay. So keep going back to your story and getting sidetracked. So your college, you get the corporate job, start the podcast. How does that start turning into money for you? What are you doing to start building a business?
I immediately sold my house.
Okay.
I bought a beautiful house, 25, 26,
you're still on the East Coast?
Still in Atlanta. Started the business, but I was like, I need to get myself off the hook for this mortgage. I need to give myself a chance to actually be successful. Sold my house.
Props to
you. Moved into a tiny apartment, and then COVID hit.
Oh, wow. Yep. Okay.
So I did everything out of my time.
So you started the podcast in 19 or 20?
19.
19.
Okay. End of 19. But I immediately hired a coach because I quit my job and I was like, I need to make money and I don't know what I'm selling. Or what.
A business coach
that was focused on coaching. So I started offering one-on-one and group coaching. Mm-hmm. I built out a program and started doing little workshops. And literally it was just one foot in front of the other. Like just started with like, now when I look back at my graphics and my marketing for it, it's so cringy, but like I have love for her.
It was me and Canva for like the first 2 years.
Totally. Totally. So it started with that. And then I ran a group coaching program that turned into a mastermind that I did several times, one-on-one group coaching. And then in 2020, during COVID, everyone's on lockdown. Everyone's on social media. TikTok, I randomly got an email from TikTok and I had no followers on Instagram. I'd like only ever used my Instagram for personal reasons. Now I'm trying to make this pivot into business and use it for marketing myself. And I get this random email that I almost deleted because I was like, I don't know why TikTok's emailing me, about something called the Creative Learning Fund that they were starting during COVID as a way to bring, they were trying to position TikTok as not just a kids platform for dancing, right? And they wanted to bring other thought leaders and experts and people in other niches and verticals that were educating people from home. So I signed up for this little program that they were doing. They were like, we'll pay you $1,500 to make like 40 videos and start your TikTok. And I was in the motivation like niche. And during those 40 videos, during that ramp up of like, I'm just going to put content out there. I wasn't afraid to put content out there because I knew no one on the platform at the time. And so I just went for it. And in that first month of putting out 40 videos consistently, I started to see immediate growth. And I remember one video, it was 3 years ago yesterday, that was my first viral video. And all of a sudden, I sort of started to build this community and this audience simply off me talking about my life and the lessons I was learning and the things I was going through. And all of these people were looking to me and now considered me, you know, an expert in this space in some ways, but people trust who they see and who they see consistently. And so I just started posting on TikTok and built a following there. Yesterday we hit 1 million followers. So it's been about 3 years. Thank you. Yeah, it's a big accomplishment, but a lot of, to answer your question, how did I make money? It started with coaching and then brands started reaching out and wanting to do brand partnerships with me. And it's only been recently that we've brought on, you know, some other streams of revenue. I ran retreats and now I have the podcast and that's doing really well. And I've done consulting. It was really be scrappy and figure out what you can offer. And that's what I did for like the first year before things started to take off.
Yeah. Just like, what can I sell?
What skills do I have?
It was like, I have to fulfill now.
Right.
Got to learn how to do that part of the business. You know, it's coming from sales. You just sell and you think it's done. You know, and then you become a business owner. You're like, oh, I actually have to like do the things now.
Wait, there's no ops team that I hand this over to and you guys fulfill on deliverables?
Tori, meet. I guess meet me. Yes, yeah, because I'm going to be the one to do everything now.
Yeah. So it's been a huge learning curve and it continues to be like every day. I just learn more about who I am, what I want to do. And there was a point though, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I don't know if you've ever heard of Brand Builders Group. They're a group out of Nashville. Yeah, Rory Vaden and his wife, AJ, run it. I joined them. They help personal brands monetize and really figure out their messaging and who they are and who they help. And that was really important for me because as soon as I started working with them, one of the first things they had me do was look at my streams of revenue and how I was making money. And at the time it was one-on-one and group coaching. That was like primarily. And then it was like brand partnerships. And then it was a retreat. And then it was affiliates, maybe the podcast, right? And one of the things they encouraged me to do was to look at where I was bringing in money. And the next thing is, how do you want to be making money long-term? So a couple of years from now, what would you like your business model to look like? For me, it was speaking and bigger deals in the podcast. And it became very clear as soon as I defined that I needed to make strategic business decisions to move away from just the coaching piece. Why get myself into a year-long contract with all these people again and commit another year when ultimately I want to be speaking and doing podcasts? So that helped me to start to see where I needed to start to shift my priorities and what to say yes to and what to say no to in my business. Even if it seems like a good opportunity at the time and this client wants to hire me.
That's the hardest part. It's the hardest part to turn down money.
But it's not aligned with where I want to go.
It's not in my DNA to turn down money, but it has to be.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I learned how to say no to things that look good, but might not feel good for me long term.
Yeah. Well, super interesting. What's next for you, you think?
You know, I've been getting this question a lot lately and the truth at this moment in time is more of what I'm doing right now. Like I really feel like I'm in a place that I have everything I want in life. in personally and professionally, I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing in terms of speaking, facilitating, and doing this podcast and having this conversation. So it's more of this on a bigger scale. Yeah. Because right now I just feel really fulfilled, and that might change, you know, down the road.
Sure. Yeah.
But probably a book at some point.
Yeah.
That's been on the horizon. We've had some opportunities and deals come up, but it hasn't been the right one. And who knows? I mean, ultimately, I would love to have my show continue to take off and either be doing really well, have its own TV show or whatever. But sure. More of what we're currently doing, definitely.
Well, congrats on the success you've seen so far. Seems well-earned, well-deserved. And yeah, we'll be following along the journey. If you're listening, watching right now, go check out some of Tori's stuff. Where is the best place, the one place that you want them to go connect with you more?
The Coachable Podcast. Yeah, we're going to have Travis on very soon. So yes. You're going to be able to come hear our conversation where he's in the guest seat soon. That's where you can find us on YouTube and Apple, Spotify, wherever.
So for checking this out right now, the Coachable Podcast, whatever podcast app you're listening in, search that or go check it out on YouTube. Tori, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet and leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.